Welcome back to Switchcast Season 5. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders.
Ayo, what's
there
up?
There we go. Pat. By request. By request. We are the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people. Speaking of news, some say that revenge is a dish best served cold. Well, we believe that is also the case with news, right? We're never the first to report. But if you like your automotive news served cold but with extra sauce, we are your podcast. Snark sauce, that is.
I would say, what is the... Yeah, we're very good at that. We just... We have opinions. You may agree with them, you may not. Doesn't matter.
As long as you ours. Find them funny or ridiculous, that's
entertaining,
cool.
Entertaining, slightly.
Absolutely. And if you do enjoy this podcast, please help us out with the algorithms. Like, share, subscribe, leave a comment, leave a five-star review, whatever. That will help us out greatly. It is, as it's always been, free for the listeners until it isn't. Unlike Cars and Bids, which is free forever, right, for people listening. But anyway, our sponsors enable this to happen, and the more views we get, the more they sponsor us. So, yeah, help us out with that if you wish. Next week, special announcement. A lot of people have been remiss for lack of a live show. And we have heard you, and we're going to do a Switchcast Christmas special. Tuesday, September 17th, I guess by the time...
September 17th?
December
17th. My goodness.
By the time you hear this episode in December, so far in the future, Monday, right? If you're listening or watching on Monday, it will be tomorrow. So set your calendars. We're going to go live around 8:30 p.m. on December 17th, 2024.
Now you got very specific. And you messed up once, and now you're over very specific.
Overcompensating.
Just like old times.
Story
old times
of my
meeting
life.
A few months ago. But we'll be back. It'll be cozy. It'll be Christmas time. We're excited to be here, to doing stuff, and then to not be here and doing stuff because it's Christmas time.
Exactly. So. Yes. Ulterior motive, so we don't have to film other stuff the week of Christmas. Anyway, so hope you'll join us. Tuesday, September 17th, 8:30-ish p.m. for a special live show. We are going to debut December again. Did I do it again?
No, you said 8 and then you said about 8:30.
No, I said 8:30.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yes. Yes. I know what I'm doing sometimes.
Yeah, September guy over here.
Right. We're going to debut a few new sub-segments that we have in the works and try them out. You guys can vote and be like, yeah, that one's awesome. No, that one stinks. And we're also going to be doing a couple watch giveaways. Sheffield Watches, our sponsor. We're going to be giving away a few watches that evening to live listeners. So again, tune in on our YouTube channel, Switch Cars. But moving on to tonight's main topic, number one.
Let's go.
Oh, yes. Topic of hot debate. Well, apparently there isn't much debate. Everybody just thinks I'm wrong.
Oh?
Right. Winter driving. Mm-hmm. So last year we talked about whether or not you should warm up your car in the winter. And that was a topic of definitely heated debate. No pun intended. Well, yes, absolutely pun intended there.
Doug, are we going to get canceled again? Is this? Did we get canceled last time?
No.
I think people just argued.
I made a lot of money off of people arguing.
Well, at least one of us did.
It all went to Ethan. Yeah, I know. So... Next debate to get everybody fired up. Hopefully we'll gain some traction on this debate. It's a future joke. You'll get it in a minute, listeners. Front wheel drive versus rear wheel drive, specifically in the winter. Which one's better?
Whichever one has winter tires.
Oh,
sorry. I spoiled it. My bad.
Okay. Yes. Tires are of the utmost importance, right? All wheel drive doesn't matter if you have garbage tires. And any crappy car, you could have a Mustang with snow tires and it'll be better than almost any other car without snow tires, because ultimately you have four contact patches that are touching the road, and it doesn't matter what electronic doodads, what weight distribution you have, what you have going on, if the thing you have contacting the road isn't gripping the road, it doesn't matter what else is going on, right? That is the communication. That is the first line of communication with the road. So yes, tires are.
Well, and I think before we get started, because we talked about all-wheel drive helps get you going in the snow. For those of you that don't know, it doesn't help you stop. Tires are about the only thing other than functioning brakes that are going to help you stop if you need to in an emergency. So just make sure you got some good rubber.
Correct. An old driving instructor of mine said, all-wheel drive doesn't mean all-wheel stop.
Yes.
Right? So you have to think about your tires, right? Front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, and all-wheel drive cars all stop exactly the same. So all-wheel drive is only an advantage when you are accelerating, which is a relatively small percentage of driving, I would say. So, front-wheel drive versus rear-wheel drive. I am starting out this discussion firmly in the camp, and spoiler alert, I'm going to end the discussion still in this camp because I've already decided rear-wheel drive is better than front-wheel drive. Hot take.
Well, are you doing that just to be a contrarian, Doug?
No, I've always believed that.
Well, it is more fun. It's more dynamic. You have more control.
Tell me why I'm wrong, Tyler.
I think you are right for people like us who are self-proclaimed good at driving and can handle such a situation. I think it makes a lot of sense if you're driving a 911 and the weight of the engine is over the rear wheels. A 911 on winter tires is amazing. I think for the vast...
I thought a 911 had 50-50 weight distribution.
No, it's a 944 and a 968. The best 944, if you're keeping track at home. They're not 50-50.
Close.
Way more in the back, isn't it?
Well, the mass is in the back, but that doesn't mean it doesn't still have a equal weight distribution.
But you still got all of that hanging over the rear end to like help you.
Okay.
Shtick.
Fine.
I think for the vast motoring public, who, as we have learned on many road trips together, are not good at driving, having something that is more predictable, like a front-wheel drive car, where it will understeer instead of oversteer, it'll kind of just keep going straight. Like, that is maybe a little safer than trying to have them deal with the motion of the ocean of a sliding rear-wheel drive car.
I love how you're actually making my argument for me already. You're playing right into it.
We didn't plan this.
So you're saying,
I'm so sorry.
You're saying that front-wheel drive is better because people suck at driving.
100%, yeah.
So it's not better, it's just compensating.
Yeah, because I think personally, I would like the ability to change direction and move. Like, and I feel like you have that better with a car that will oversteer versus understeer. Like, understeer, you're just going to keep going straight.
I'm going to use a golf analogy, which is risky because I'm terrible at golf. However, in golf, they always say that you should play the club that, like, you're supposed to play, right? So if you shoot 180 yards with your 5-iron, right? Which is pretty terrible. That's about what I would do. And you're like, oh shoot, I'm really not feeling this. I'm going to play a 3-iron. So I hope I make it there, or vice versa. That never works out because then you choke up your swing. You do whatever you're not supposed to do instead of just playing the club because you suck at golf, which I do suck at golf. This is a perfect analogy. But you're always supposed to play the club as if your swing is going to be correct. If it isn't correct, then you have to go get golf lessons and fix your golf. You don't use the wrong club. So you're saying that people should use the wrong tool for the job as a compensation method because of their lack of driving skills.
But I think the difference in your analogy versus real life is that you're not going to potentially injure, well, you could injure somebody with a golf club, I guess, or a ball that you hit with it, but it's not going to be disrupting the roadway, potentially killing somebody. Like, we should, nobody is going to take driving lessons to learn how to drive in the winter, even though they should. So we just got to deal with what God has given us, which is a fleet of front-wheel drive econoboxes.
Well, then front-wheel drive is more dangerous because if you can't drive, if you can't handle a rear-wheel drive car, you're just going to spin around into the ditch immediately and not endanger anybody. But a front-wheel drive car will allow you to cheat your way out of your bad driving and get somewhere and then not be able to stop and then wreck.
No, but I feel like transportation is a little more. People should be able to get where they need to go if the weather's not.
Driving is not a right. Driving is a privilege. No, it is not.
Yes, we have talked about that. That is correct.
People should be able to get where they need to go if they don't have insurance. That's, right? They gotta feed their families. All right. Well, since I've silenced Tyler, let's talk about the principles behind this. Okay. Yes. So there's tons of anecdotes all over the internet about rear-wheel drive cars struggling and fishtailing in the winter versus front-wheel drive cars. Oh, yeah. I just see them plowing through the snow. Okay. Great. But those anecdotes are not proper studies, right? We don't know which ones had snow tires and which ones didn't. We didn't know what the weight distribution of the car was. We didn't know what the width of the tires were, because that matters. All of these different factors matter. What I would opine is that all things being equal, right? So if you take two cars with similar weight distribution, with similar width of tires, and with the exact same snow tires, that rear-wheel drive is fundamentally better than front-wheel drive. And that front-wheel drive was designed as a compensation method for people not knowing or not wanting to know how to handle rear-wheel drive cars in the winter. Because with rear-wheel drive cars, you have to actually modulate the throttle, right? But if you do, you have better control. The problem is you have to actually know what your car is doing and respond to what it's telling you, whether or not you have traction. With front-wheel drive, if you lose traction, you can just keep the throttle mashed and it'll kind of pull you in the right general direction, right? It's not going to spin around on you. So for the untrained drivers, front-wheel drive is a mechanism that allows them to get where they need to go without actually knowing what they're doing. But the reason rear-wheel drive is better, one of the biggest fundamental reasons, is weight transfer, right? So when you accelerate, which is when the drive wheels matter, doesn't matter when you're braking, it doesn't matter when you're turning. When you accelerate, what happens to the weight of the car?
It goes to the back.
Goes to the back. Thank you. Case closed. I'm done. I win.
Arguing with Doug is not fun, guys.
Okay. Ever been in a front-wheel drive car when it's like slightly wet and you pass like the white line that's at an intersection and your wheels spin as you go over it?
Yeah.
So that's like a good example of what's happening. Like, because you go from dry pavement to wet, or like a slick surface, and it's because when you're accelerating, it's pulling the weight off of the drive wheel. So as you're accelerating, you're literally decreasing your available traction to your drive wheels. So you're like, it's counterintuitive. You're actually working against yourself. Whereas rear wheel drive cars, again, same principle, the weight goes to the rear. So when you are accelerating, you are giving yourself more traction to your drive wheels by doing the exact thing for which they need traction.
Well, it is easy to get a lesson in that. A couple of years ago when I had my 968, I took it out in the snow to go to a parking lot playground with you. And on the way there, I had, without thinking about it, just let off the throttle because I was going fast enough. There was nobody on the road. Well, what happened is the weight wasn't all the way in the back anymore. It went to the front and I started doing like massive fishtailing in the middle of the road. And I was like, oh, hey, that's what physics does. But because I was driving an all-wheel drive car for the most part in the wintertime, I just kind of forgot about that for a little bit.
Right.
I wasn't second nature. And I do think front-wheel drive cars have the benefit of the engine being on the front to counteract some of the physics you're talking about, but it isn't a perfect system. As I said when we started, the perfect system is a Porsche 911. Case closed.
Done.
He's not wrong. A 911 is one of the greatest winter cars ever. But for the rest of us, this is a real discussion. Which, it's kind of a moot point because there's hardly any rear-wheel drive cars out there anyway, other than sports cars, which, you know, Well,
do I love the image of the guy in Cleveland in a Miata with the top down on like 480 or 422 or something from a few years ago in like a blizzard. It was amazing.
Pete Jackson sent me a photo the other day in Chardon where there was like a foot of snow and there was a Corvette C6 in a parking lot.
Nice.
And I was like, did that guy accidentally leave it there? Like he thought there was a show and didn't know it was going to snow. And he's like, nope, he was out driving. So
respect.
He put snow tires on it. Honestly, if you learn how to drive and put snow tires on a proper rear-wheel drive car, it is the most fun you can ever have. The winter blues of Ohio or anywhere else become, well, winter whites.
Well, and I do think, not to distract from Doug winning his argument that he planned to win anyway too much, that... Now, the local constabulary might frown upon this, and you might have to have some discussions you don't want to have, but I think if one of the best things you can do in the wintertime is go to a parking lot during a big snowstorm when it hasn't been plowed and just see what your car does. Try to make it lose, try to lose control, try to make it slide so that you know how to work with the car if that happens when you're on the road with other people. Like I said, that's maybe somebody's going to come bug you about it, and don't be a hooligan. Don't like cause a ruckus. But I think that is such a good way to learn that is frowned upon by society that I do not understand. You need to know how your car responds.
That's very true. People ask me all the time what the best radar detector is. And I say the one that you know and that you understand how it works. Same thing with cars. Doesn't matter what you have. If you have summer tires in the winter because you can't afford snow tires or whatever, fine. Just figure out where they lose traction and what your limits are so you understand. If you have to drive 3 miles an hour, then know where that limit is. But I feel like front-wheel drive ultimately is kind of like all the other nannies that we put on cars. Laser-guided cruise control, backup cameras, stuff like that. In theory, they're good. But in practice, I believe they're not because they make drivers dependent on these features and then we lose the skills that we had. So those skills are no longer required. And so then we just don't even have them anymore. So now the nannies are required in place of the skills we used to have because nobody knows how to use their mirrors backing up or to maintain a safe following distance between them and the car in front of them. Or modulate the throttle when it's snowing out with a rear-wheel drive car. So I feel like it's kind of like Social Security, right? We can't get rid of it now. Front-wheel drive is a crappy system, but we can't just get rid of it because we've always already lost the battle as everybody's become just terrible drivers.
Ugh.
Sorry. Don't mean to insult everybody, but you know.
No, honestly, most drivers on the road suck. I'm not trying to act like I'm, you know, the best. I'm at least average or slightly above average.
There's a statistic that says 85% of drivers think they're better than average.
I might be in that 85%, but I would like to think that I at least am a little better based on the crap I've seen. Oh, I'm not saying I'm in the top 10%. Top 40, maybe.
All right, let's try out one of the new segments tonight. And speaking of cars, we're going to talk about vanity plates. This was a suggestion from a friend of the podcast, Alan Hoover. And he said, hey, I've got an idea for your podcast. Why don't you read off vanity plates and see if the other person can guess what car they go with?
I am guessing, Doug, because I don't have any to give to you, that these are all for me to guess. And
absolutely.
I get to embarrass myself.
Probably.
Love it.
Yes, but we're going to try it out and see how it goes. All right. First one, bagpipes with a Z.
Okay. I don't think there are many or any Scottish cars. So it can't be. It's not one of those. So it's somebody who probably loves Scotland, is very, I don't know. I'm going to say...
Their other car probably has Amazing Grace as the plate.
I'm going to say that is like a...
Kilt cult.
A Chevy Suburban or SUV of some kind.
On the right track, actually. Okay. It's a Toyota 4Runner.
Okay.
So, not bad.
Somebody's transportation that just really likes something. It's not about the car.
Right, right. All right, here's one. Good luck with this one. But it's the Christmas season, so Lil Elf.
Like a Honda Fit? I don't know.
Equally as pedestrian, a Chevy Traverse.
Oh, yeah. It's a washing machine if I've ever seen one.
Okay, this one, I didn't expect the answer on this one because I know what it used to be on. Dropout.
Oh, that used to be on a Mercy, didn't it?
It used to be on a Lamborghini Murcielago, and then I think he got like an Aventador SV or something that. Like that. What is Dropout on now?
Is it still the same guy?
I don't know. Oh. I don't know. I can't see people. I can't see what they own.
You didn't do any research? You didn't give this to a research assistant? That's got to be on a Mercedes-Benz now.
What?
Like some... Well, like, I don't know. I'm going to guess anymore. All right,
Mercedes what?
Some S-Class.
Yes!
Really?
Yes, Mercedes S63.
Yeah, nice! That's what I'm talking about.
I'm kind of disappointed, though, because like Dropout... It has to be a humble brag plate. Like, it's got to be on something ridiculous.
Like a Lamborghini, a McLaren, a Ferrari. Yes. Like, not even a Porsche wouldn't work unless it was... Yeah, no, a Porsche wouldn't work. The Porsche's too responsible.
Right. No, no.
I win.
In contrast to that, a dear friend of mine who is no longer with us had the opposite plate of that. He had his plate was College Pays.
Huh. Nice.
But it was on a Camaro, and I'm like...
Apparently not as much as Dropping Out does.
Yeah, like, right? Ugh. Like, ugh. Anyway, okay. Prince.
There's more. I was going to go out on a high note.
Nope, sorry.
Prince is on a Malibu.
No. Equally as lame. 2012 Mercedes CLK 350.
Okay, so the German Malibu.
Yep, yep. Kind of a wannabe. I feel like that should have been, like, if you're calling yourself Prince, man, you better, like, have a Maybach or something like that.
Yeah, something really up there.
All right, last one. Jeep Killer.
Is that on one of those, what is the... Totally, the Bronco Raptors or something like that.
One Ford Bronco Raptor.
Yeah.
Good guess. Bronco is correct, but it's not a real Bronco. It's a Bronco Sport.
Oh, what? Somebody right? Put Jeep Killer on a Bronco Sport?
Right.
Ugh. The Chevy Malibu plate of away. Midsize crossovers.
Take that plate away.
Yeah. God, even a normal Bronco would have been fine. Like.
Right. Right. Terrible. Terrible.
I mean, it'll probably still be around when the Jeeps aren't, because they're going to rust away before that disappears. But still, like, yeesh. Yikes. Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles, because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
What is a day in the life of the exotic car business like? Or really, any car business, you know? 40 years ago, people looked at used car salesmen as lower than the rest of society, maybe. Not even, like, maybe subhuman.
Has that changed?
Jacket. Yes, it has. I go to parties and people are like, what do you do? Not parties like people think, like, you know, old people parties, you know, networking and stuff. We're home by 9:30 p.m. People are like, what do you do? And I try to downplay it because I don't want to talk about, like, when people are like, oh my gosh, you sell Ferraris. I'm like, I'm a used car salesman. Like, really? That's cool. So how does that work?
What? Well, I don't know. I buy and sell cars.
Yeah, like, right. I'm like, I buy them and then I sell them. So, like, do you restore them? I'm like, no, I'm not a restoration shop. I'm a used car dealer.
What is it you said that saying? It's like, I buy a $5 bill for $4 and sell it for $5.
Yes.
Yeah, like, that's what I do.
Exactly. So anyway, but then, like, when people find out, like, the cars that we deal with, they're just like, oh my gosh, that's my dream job. Or that must be amazing. Like, you just drive amazing cars all day.
See, that they think it's their dream job.
Correct.
So many people think that doing your hobby is a job is the dream. And for some people, and I think for Doug over here, it definitely is in some way, but it's not all sunshine and rainbows.
Right. It can be. It can be. But, and I want to give credit where credit's due, because I believe this, but Mike Rowe kind of coined it. He said, follow your passion is the biggest scam on the planet. Like, that is the worst advice ever, because you might suck at something that you're passionate about, or it might pay jack squat. Like, that's what gets people into massive student loan debt for a degree that's useless, is they followed their passion into $250,000 in 6 years of a college experience.
That kind of GT3 I could get for $250,000 in debt. You know what I mean?
It would have two more letters.
Yeah, it would.
RS. So anyway, people then ask, like, what's a typical day like for you? And I'm like, really, it's kind of like any other business. Like, there's paperwork and there's customers and there's money being moved, and it just happens to be attached to fancy cars. Like, yeah, there's a great component to it. But I had a couple Tuesdays recently that I feel like are good illustrations of how kind of nutty this car business can be in a very normal way, right? To kind of dispel the theory of, you know, just follow your passion, do what you love, and you'll never work a day in your life. Bunch of bull crap. Right.
Lies.
Right. So
I love my job and I still work every day.
Exactly. Work is work, and people shouldn't be scared of work. That's why they pay you to go there. The first one was Giving Tuesday, right? So we ran a special for Giving Tuesday where we slashed prices, but only for 12 hours, only on our website. So it's like flash sale. If you commit today, you can have it for this price. Tomorrow, they're going back up to regular pricing. And we did get a lot of interest. And we said, like, we'll donate a portion to charity, et cetera, of you know, any sales that happened that day from the promotion. And we thought we had some really, really great sales. But the oddest thing was, like, we were crazy busy, but at the end of the day, when the smoke cleared, I think out of like 8 deals, we were net positive 1. Don't ask me how that works, but we had 1 deal contracted going into there, multiple deals contracted, but the first deal we had contracted going into that day, the guy had changed his mind, I think 5 times. So he said he'd buy it, then he said no, then he said he'd buy it, then he said no. Then he said we had sent contracts, and he sent the contracts back with a check. And then that morning he said, never mind, I'm out again, sorry, I changed my mind. So we like start the day negative 1, even though we had a check in hand for the car. So we're like, okay. But then we sold that car twice to other people. Well, not really twice, only one of them committed that day, okay. But 2 people wanted it. So we got a deposit on that car, but that wasn't even one that was part of the Giving Tuesday sale, because we thought it was already sold.
Nice.
We had another car that we had contracted on Monday that the buyer was supposed to wire money on Tuesday. He changed his mind. I saw the text thread with our sales guy, and he changed his mind probably like 3 different times, saying he couldn't get insurance. Then he could get insurance. Then he wasn't sure about the car. Then, yes, I am sure, I got insurance, I'm going to wire money now, to like 11 p.m. on Tuesday, just kidding, I can't get insurance, I don't want the car.
I feel like the insurance is kind of a scapegoat there. It can't totally be that hard to get insurance.
Insurance, wife, you know, interchangeable scapegoats there.
Oh, I'm glad you added scapegoats. I was like, those two are not interchangeable. Look, I'm not married, and I can tell you I'd rather have a wife than an insurance guy around me all the day, all the time.
So, all right. So we're plus 1, minus 1. So we're net minus 1, right? So that deal unwound. Then we sold a Jaguar XK140 that we didn't even have yet and wasn't even on the website. The guy who traded it in sold it to his friend, but we owned it. So he's just like, he can buy it from you. So we're back to net 0, but none of those were part of the Giving Tuesday sale.
There's lots of action happening. None of it related to what you're doing, like what you were trying to promote.
Then we had sold a black Porsche 997 the previous week. It was on a truck to the buyer, all paid for, everything. And we had put the title in the buyer's name the day before. And he called and he's like, I just saw the silver one you had. Can I trade? Like, I'll just turn the truck around and put the silver one on the truck instead. So we had to like make sure the title bureau would unwind the title deal and everything like that. And we're like, yeah, okay, fine, ship it back. So that was a net zero.
Still zero.
Unsold one and resold another one that also wasn't part of the Giving Tuesday sale.
Was there something special about this silver one? Was it better?
He just wanted silver. That was the color he was looking for, which it's not like silver's rare, right? Everybody's going after topaz blue and paint to sample and maritime and Vesuvio and all that. Okay, so we're plus one, I think. No,
maybe I thought we were still at zero.
I don't know. And then we had a BMW M6 that we had contracted for almost a week, and the guy said he was going to wire money, and then it just like, I think we just decided on Tuesday that the deal wasn't going to happen because he wasn't responding to us. And this was a previous customer too. He just like, contracts were signed, but just like, I'm going to take my time. So we declared that one unsold. So I think we sold four cars, I think, but somehow we were negative one for Giving Tuesday. Don't ask me how that
did
works.
Any deals happen on Giving Tuesday vehicles?
No.
Nice. Will you
marketing
do
the, fail?
Will you do this again next year, Doug?
Yes. Okay. I very much enjoyed it. And we got a lot of interest and a lot of discussions and stuff like that. So it was fun. And then some people on Wednesday were like, hey, can I buy it for that price? No. No, you can't.
It literally was in bold text on like every listing, I think.
Yes.
It's like, this is only Tuesday.
Sorry, 24-hour deal. You didn't call us then. The whole point of it was to get people off the pot and to commit. But then today was another crazy Tuesday. And this was a couple odd scenarios that just like make work, no matter what kind of cars we're dealing with, right? One, I started out the morning trying to send a wire transfer to a customer for a car we bought. And usually it's easy. I go online, send the wire transfer, whatever. We have a second account, like our reserve account, whatever, that we use sometimes. And I had just like redone our wire transfer agreement for that account. And so this was our first wire transfer we were sending under the new wire transfer agreement. So I requested the wire yesterday, but was then told that they needed more information than previously. So it literally took me half an hour to compile the information to email them over for this form in the format that they wanted. I emailed it over, password protected the stuff and all that because they want all this private stuff sent via email. I'm like, what kind of bank asked for that via email? But whatever. So sent it over in an encrypted document, called them an hour later and was like, hey, did you get everything as a wire sent? Oh, let me open it now. Oh, I can't open it. It has a password. I'm like, yeah, I know. I explained all this in the email. And like, okay. So I told them a password. They opened it up. Okay, yeah, we'll get to work on this. So I called them like another hour later to check and be like, okay, are we good? This customer's expecting the wire. We thought it was sent yesterday. Well, yep, everything looks fine. I have a couple clarifying questions. It's got to go to a manager to approve it. And then it'll get sent. I'm like, okay.
What questions could they still possibly have? You sent them a document.
It's always something. Sometimes they just call and they want to be like, okay, well, confirming the account number this is going to. So I gave them a couple hours. I went and got a couple cavities filled and literally, and had a dentist appointment. And then call them again, 1 p.m. because their wire cutoff for this bank is 2 p.m. to like have everything to the wire room. And they said, yes, it's been approved by the manager. It's been sent up to the wire room. I'm like, great. Can I get a confirmation or something? Well, when it gets sent out, we'll get a confirmation. 3:50 p.m. I haven't got anything and they're closing at 4. I'm like calling. Nobody picks up their phone. I'm like, you didn't send the wire. You had all day to send a wire. I have a customer who thinks I'm scamming him because he sent us his banking details and I have to explain why all these excuses, which sound like a normal shady dealer who's making up excuses. Like I always call dealers like delay artists, right? They're always finding a way to not pay for something or not get a title. And I'm like, this is all legitimate, but it sounds so shady. So that was like an hour and a half of my day was trying to get a wire transfer sent. And then on the flip side of it, I had a title show up from a customer for a car we sold that was the wrong title, the wrong Porsche that he owned. He sent us the wrong title.
What?
And this was another deal. We sold the car like 2.5 weeks ago. But because he was gone for like a week and a half for Thanksgiving, so I overnighted him a check and a return envelope for the title. By now, the buyer is like, hey, where's my title?
Because he probably thinks you're scamming him.
Exactly. Because again, what do shady dealers, what have we learned from all the scams we've talked about? Delays, no titles, no payments, all this stuff. So I'm like, both ends of this today. And I'm like, crap, I told the guy his title would be there this week. And I have a title, but it's the wrong dang car.
So was it like signed over to you and everything?
Oh, yeah. Oh, signed off to me and everything. And I checked to make sure it's correctly signed and nothing was screwed up and everything was fine. It was just the wrong car.
I said, oh, I grabbed the wrong title for one of my Porsches. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
So now I get to call that customer and be like, okay, so this is going to sound like lots of lies, but he sent us the wrong title. So give us a couple more days. And somebody might say, well, why don't you have the titles on hand for your consignment cars? Well, if you've learned anything from our previous podcasts, that's how consignment dealers scam their sellers, is they get titles before they've sold the car and before the consignees, consignors, I always mess that up, before the consign, the person who consigned it is paid. And I'm like, I don't want them to feel that risk. Like So,
nice.
Shady.
So today was just work.
Today was just work.
Nice.
So, yeah. And it was all basically stuff that trying to prevent things that would make me look like a scammer, even though we're not. But however bad that day was in the car business, it wasn't as bad as a Mazda dealer in Utah.
I did see this. Yikes. Woo.
So Tyler, what happened here?
Well, I got sent a reel of a Subaru of some sort driving into a Mazda dealer. It was in back. It was like, whoo, returned, I guess. Returned to sender. The guy was not happy. There's some expletives. There was lots of broken glass and intensity. So
apparently the secretary receptionist was not at work that day because he drove right into the receptionist's desk.
Plowed through it. Scary stuff.
Yep. On camera. It was interesting.
So allegedly, from what we found, this person purchased this car, found some mechanical issues, wanted the dealership to take it back.
Subaru.
Well, yeah, probably head gaskets. They wanted
he
the
was a head gasket. He blew his head gasket. Oh, dang! I should have written that before.
Come on, delivery. Doug. We're professionals now. We gotta keep this on the up and up. But yeah, allegedly there were some mechanical issues. They wanted to return it. Dealer said no go, not happening as is. And I guess the guy threatened to drive it into the dealership, which he then did because he said, "I told you, mother effers," or something like that.
Yeah. Wild. And they responded, as is, mother effer.
Yeah.
Yikes. Oh, man. That Subaru was not out back anymore. It was right in front.
Prime placement in the showroom, I think.
Yes.
Whew.
He might have been annoyed that he was getting stereotyped. He didn't realize the stereotype that comes along with a Subaru owner. And, you know, that got his goat or something like that. So,
yeah.
It's avid hunters. And...
Right. Yes. Yes.
Last one for the day is shrewd negotiator. Following up on a day in the life of the car business. This was somebody who was trying to buy a car today. Well, they weren't actually trying to buy it today. They were trying to buy it in April. They were interested in a Ferrari we had, and they had a Bentley for trade. And they mentioned they were traveling in Florida or Mexico or somewhere down south and over the winter. Okay, no problem. We can do deals remotely. They wanted a pre-purchase inspection. Again, not a problem. We can make all those things happen. They want a value on their trade. Yep, we can certainly put a number on your Bentley. We can do all these things. And they said they'd be back in April. I'm like, okay. So they would like to come by the week after they get back in April and do the PPI then and come by and do the deal.
What?
Or talk about doing the deal. And I'm like, hold on.
Are they going to pay you storage fees?
No, they're not even going to do the deal until then. I'm like, what? April's like, usually we hold cars for 5 days. Like, that's like an eternity away. Like, between now and April, like, the world won't be the same. Like, I'm in my 30s now. I'll be in my 40s then.
Whole different world.
That's, I'm not holding a car that long. Like, we're going to have a different president by then.
You know, with the mint green GT3 might actually find the one and never be for sale again.
That's well, true. The million mile 456 could be running and driving by then.
Well, I mean, let's calm down a little bit. I think Freddy's P1 will be running and driving, but it's still going to be filled with so much sand, it's going to sound like maracas over every bump in the road.
I mean, that is too long. Too long to hold a car. But hey, man, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Michael Scott. This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast. Now, we talk a lot on this podcast about scammers and how not to get scammed.
I'm not even sure we would have a podcast if it wasn't for this topic. It is critical. It is a load-bearing topic of this podcast.
Doug Scam Tabbit. But tonight, we're going to talk about how not to become a scammer.
Is that hard?
You wouldn't think.
Just don't scam people.
I understand. It seems
segment over. See you guys next
week. Yes, okay. But not everybody starts out, right? Nobody goes out in a car thinking, I'm going to get in a car crash today.
That's true.
But the way to actively avoid being in a car crash is to work on your driving skills, anticipate things that go wrong, right? Same thing with scamming. Most of the people I know personally that have ended up becoming scammers was not something they woke up and said, I'm going to screw people over today. I'm going to steal money. It was a pattern of bad decisions, kind of like one domino, the next domino, or one bad decision led to another, covering up for a lie, or, you know, well, shoot, I'm going to try to get out of this. The next deal will get me out. And, you know, one bad deal turns into this giant thing where all of a sudden it's too far and you can't go back anymore. And I believe there's a principle at work here. Not everybody will agree with me about the human nature, but I believe that all of us have the same propensity to evil, right? Versus the belief that there's good people and bad people, right? Well, we're law-abiding citizens. We vote for Trump and carry guns and blah, 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 and drive Chevys. Then, you know, we're good people versus all those criminals out there, right? I don't believe that exists. All of us have the capability of doing really, really terrible things given the right scenario, set of emotions, frustrations, etc. Hope, lack of hope, desperation. If you don't believe me, road rage. Road rage is a perfect example of normal people ending up as criminals just because their emotions got the better of them.
No, I want to argue with you because I think it's good for the podcast, but I pretty much agree. I don't think it's like literally everything in life. And if you disagree with me on this, you're just wrong. There is a spectrum. It is gray. There is a middle ground somewhere. There is nuance. You know, like, killing is bad. Yes. I'm sure you can come up with a situation where there's nuance. Like, as truly terrible as that topic is, there is nuance. So I think the same thing.
Self-defense.
Yes.
That's not really even nuance.
But I think a lot of people like to forget that. So I think in people, there is nuance. There are people who do more good things, and there are people who do more bad things. But each one of them has the potential to do the opposite, to do, you know.
Well, and on what scale of morality, too? Who's, like, what line are we using?
Yeah.
Because I've met people who are scammers that don't believe that they are. They operate from a different worldview and a different standard of morality that is essentially like, well, I'm not taking this out of your pocket. I'm negotiating in a way, or I'm misrepresenting something that, well, if you believe that, you willingly gave me your money, that's too bad for you.
Yeah.
So they're operating from a totally different worldview. Not to do a weird analogy, but I was thinking of, there's an Agatha Christie novel. I think it was her last one, but it was this story about how everyone in the book, there's all these different murders, and everyone in the book was manipulated by this mastermind who didn't do any of the killings, but he manipulated everybody. He learned them so well that he created just the right scenario such that he got them to become murderers, right up to the hero detective, Hercule Poirot, I think was her hero, because he almost, he almost killed the quote unquote bad guy, the mastermind, and then realized, like, oh my gosh, this is what he's doing. Or he did end up doing it. I forget the ending. Anyway, don't want to be a spoiler alert. Go read the book. So all that said, like, some people do actually wake up every day plotting to do evil. Some wake up committed to do good. But I think the majority of us lives in that vast expanse in between where there's lots of nuance and we intend to do good, but we don't consider that we're capable of doing evil, right? So how do we actually avoid evil? One example from a scammer is Bobby Kahn. If you've not heard of him, look him up. He ran an exotic car dealership in Long Island, New York, and he scammed so many people. Now, he was running a pretty shady business before then, but he was doing a lot of things, and I don't know that he intended to screw people over, but he had an improper belief that things would work out, or like a false hope instead of a proper skepticism, or like a riskometer that was totally out of calibration. So what he was doing, one of the things of many, was he would take a car on consignment. Right? I do that all the time. But he so wanted to get the deal done on the car that he would make the consignees, I still can't get that right, the seller's payments for them while he had the car on consignment, thinking like, oh, well, I'm going to get this deal done and it'll all come back and replenish. Which, again, it's an improper belief that there's going to be a deal, that things will work out. I would never in a million years do that. And that seems asinine to us sitting back and looking at it. But when you have a hunger for a deal, then you'll do things like that that are terrible that will end up taking you down the path of, oh, shoot, now I need to make up for this because I've blown 20 grand on this consignment that I'm not going to sell. So now I got to get it from another deal. So that's one. Have a proper riskometer.
Well, and I think we've seen that a lot with some alleged scams or real scams that we've covered over the past few months, is it kind of seems like it's something started it and you just need to keep getting money in the door to pay for the things. And it's a never ending snowball that just eventually catches up. It always does.
Correct. Check your desires, right? So the same desires that make somebody vulnerable to being scammed make them, you, me, whatever, vulnerable to becoming a scammer, right? So let's TikTok, get rich quick, crypto, anything like that. If you are vulnerable to even gambling, right? How many gambling addicts have then made terrible decisions as a result of losing money gambling that they wouldn't have made otherwise? My wife about it, right? So if you are vulnerable to that type of greed, that type of get rich quick thing, those desires can be telling of what you might also be willing to do in business that would quote unquote make you a scammer. So you have to be able to have a good self-restraint in your desires. With that said, decide what you're willing to do or not do ahead of time, right? Mm. So if you're going into the car business, I mean, we're talking about the car business, but really any business, right? So for example, I don't buy track cars. I've made too many mistakes. I've lost money on too many of them. So it's just like, I only consign them. And even then I'm very picky, right? That's something I've just decided. I do not do this. And I'm able and willing to say no to those quote unquote opportunities that might end up backfiring because I've put myself in a position of success. But even if you're not in that position, you have to be able to just say, I'm not going to take on that possible risk just in hunt of a deal, right? You have to be able to just draw a hard line in the sand and say, I'm not willing to do this. I'm not willing to take this kind of a deal. Put a price on your integrity. Mm. It should be umpteen million dollars. It should be, was it American Express that says priceless, or is that Discover card? Nah, I don't know. I don't endorse any of the credit card companies, but there shouldn't be any number, any deal that you're like, oh man, I can make 200 grand on this deal. All I got to do is fudge this little thing. Because as soon as you go down that road, again, it can snowball.
And you kind of you get lured into, from what we've seen, a sense of feeling, no, this is the last one. This is the last deal. This is the last time I need to do this. And then it'll all be in the clear. But that doesn't ever seem to be the case.
Correct. Another good one. Controversial. Stay out of debt. Being out of debt gives you the freedom to make those choices on what deals you're willing to turn down, right? If you've got a payment that you have to make to keep your inventory or whatever, then you're going to take on those deals that are super risky and or might question your integrity. So, yeah. I also say debt and desperation are closely related. Desperation causes you to take on opportunities like track cars, race cars, that nobody else will touch. Sometimes that's a matter of greed, but smart greed gets rich at other people's expense, and dumb greed just blows other people's money. Has nothing to show for it.
Yes, yes.
The best observation, this is not even mine. This is the best line of the night. Car business, any other business, but especially the high-end car business, because you're surrounded with people with way more money than you. Me all the time. I have all my clients. Most of them are richer than I am. So this came from a commenter on the CPR Classic scam. He said, the fundamental problem of scammers is that they're trying to live the same lifestyle as their clients. And that just doesn't work, at least not for a long time. If all your clients are out racing Porsches, doesn't mean you can do that just because you're servicing their Porsches or selling them their Porsches. It's a different level. So don't try to live the lifestyle of your clients. That same thing was alleged about EAG. Art from EAG is he was living this crazy life like his clients, but he was working on their cars and he wasn't making the kind of money, so he was blowing that. That's what was alleged.
Do you think that social media has made this worse? Like, I know people have been scamming for this for similar reasons for, it's a tale as old as time. But do you think so? Trying to keep up with social media clout has made it worse?
Sure. I mean, keeping up with the Joneses has always existed. I think social media has exacerbated it. I also think it's exacerbated the idea of the get-rich-quick scheme, right? You used to have to work a little bit for it. You had to buy somebody's book, go to their seminar. Now it's just all right there on TikTok and social media. All these hacks, which are not real. They're not hacks.
Man, I'm so tired of things being referred to as hacks because none of them are hacks. None of them are shortcuts. None of them are anything. It's just something to draw your eyeballs.
Yep. Yep. There's a biblical principle at play here as well. And this goes back to the lifestyle thing. It's a proverb, quote, prepare your work outside, get everything ready for yourself in the field, and after that, build your house. Now, we're not going to get religious on you here, but the Proverbs are full of incredible wisdom for running a business. And I have tacked that one on my wall metaphorically, because essentially it's saying, listen, work on your clients' cars. Get those ready first. And when I was restoring Maroon 6, that verse stuck with me, because I said, any opportunity to work on an inventory car or a client's car, my car went on the back burner. And it took 6 years to finish because of that. Because I said, profit is more important than my toy. I'm in the car business. I can't take up a lift with my personal project. And I've seen a lot of people go down because they're servicing their personal race cars, their personal restorations at their business instead of working on their clients' cars. Not good.
Getting high on their own supply, as it were.
Yeah, there you go. I'm not in the street trafficking world, so I wouldn't know about that. But that's a great, Who knew drug dealers took their stuff from Proverbs? Yeah, and just,
it's kind of wild, isn't it? I don't even remember where that came from. It doesn't matter. I think it's a movie or something. Doesn't matter.
Consider the cost of the deal before you make it. This is from a good client and a previous guest on the podcast, David Nelson. He taught me that principle, is don't be too hasty to make a deal, right? And then be like, oh, shoot, what did I agree to? And because then you're tempted to compromise on your principles. He essentially is saying, like, don't put yourself in a position where you're tempted to compromise your principles. Sit back and think about everything that could go into the deal before you shake somebody's hand. And then once you shake their hand, make sure you act on the deal. Don't go back on it. But don't put yourself in a position where you even want to go back on it. And then it becomes really easy to maintain your integrity. Know when to walk away. Mm. It's not just a song, but you have to know when to walk away. If you are losing money, if you screwed one person over, just admit it and walk away. Don't try to keep like rob Peter to pay Paul. That's how a lot of these shops go down. They probably could just close up shop and say, I'm sorry, we failed. And a few people would be left holding the bag and just be like, well, that sucks. They failed. You know, we all took some losses, but instead they borrow from other people and they're like, oh, and the next one will pay this back. And then they end up screwing tons of people for millions and millions of dollars, arguably with good intentions to salvage this whole thing. But then they end up in prison and there's millions of dollars gone.
Good old sunk cost fallacy.
Yep. Yep. Anyway, so corruption and scamming are similar. It starts with a small lie. It starts with a little misstep, and then it becomes a matter of what we're willing to do in order to cover it up. I could give tons of analogies. Twinsburg police, that corruption. Ooh, yep. Local scandal here. Start with a little thing, and then somebody didn't want it to come out, so they covered it up, and now it's a big thing and a lawsuit just because somebody's kids were at a party and they didn't want their name on the police report. And, you know, something that wasn't a big deal is now a giant corruption. So, again, establish your non-negotiables, put a price on your integrity, and, you know, just check yourself you wreck yourself.
Hey-o. There it is. I'm going to need to figure out what my parents did in raising me, because they instilled this, like, it's just not worth it in me. Like, every time I, like, broke the rules or did something I wasn't supposed to as a kid, they always caught me. And maybe I was just bad at misbehaving. That's fine. But it instilled in me that, like, the consequences were never worth it. Own up to it. Because any time that I didn't, I tried to cover it up, it was always worse.
Yeah, the problem is, I think in this business culture, and, you know, it's so easy to get away with small scams, and often the consequences for people are worth it. I mean, yeah. I feel like you got to steal 10 million bucks to have any real consequences nowadays. But anyway, with that said, There's tips on how to not become a scammer. Not that any of you are planning to be, but again, no, I don't feel like most people plan to be. They just end up there.
Just whoopsie daisy. So, I'm a scammer.
Anyway, that's an answer to the question that nobody asked, but a lot of people have asked, which is, how do I get into the car business with zero money and sell exotic cars? This is where you end up if you don't like start with a set of, you know, principles and, you know, figure out what you're going to do first. This is how people get there. Is they just want to flip exotic cars and be like the TikTokers and, you know, can't hack your way to success, but you can hack your way to prison.
And with on that note, it is time for Props and Flops, brought to you by Switch Cars. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information at switchcars.com or visit our showroom in beautiful is not the right word to use, but it is in Twinsburg, Ohio. It's not beautiful this time of year. It's snowy and gross.
Well, it's somewhat corrupt, allegedly.
Yeah, I thought we were past that, Doug.
I mean, we just talked about it.
But I thought, in the rear view, my guy.
Yes.
But anyway. Their parking lot at Switch Cars is not salted, so yeah, it's safe for all your special stuff.
There you go. Just have to get there first. Pick of the week is 2007 Porsche 997 Targa 4S in Carmone or Carmona red, depending on how you read the build sheet. But it's not Carmine red. That's a later color, or an earlier Corvette color. Anyway.
Hey, it's not Guards red. That's all that I care about.
Correct. Burgundy. Six-speed manual, nice. 70,000 miles. Unfortunately, it has gray interior.
Unfortunately? That sounds amazing. That's such a good color combination, Doug.
It works with the burgundy better than with other colors.
I'll take it.
Okay.
I accept.
Our flop of the week. A Corvette boat wrecks into another boat during a boat parade. Now, It's not a Malibu Corvette boat, not like a real Corvette boat like the one I had with the LS7 engine. It's those little like jet boat rental things that you see all over social media with a Corvette body on them, which the rental is the first problem. Anybody that is a real motorboater knows that friggin' rental motorboaters are the worst motorboaters. They are just, they don't know the rules. They are a danger to everybody. Terrible. But yeah, he was trying to show off with his girl. This was during a boat parade. He's trying to show off with his girl sitting up on the side, and he like did some sort of like burnout thing into another boat and drove over their outboard motor and knocked somebody off of it.
The other person went flying. I hope they're okay, because it looked really scary.
Flying.
But also, I like that you started this, Doug, with immediately arguing about what a real Corvette boat is.
Well, yes.
There's like five of them.
There's 50, and there's probably only five that actually get used in the water. But yes, but honestly, it was amazing from watching this lack of control that it wasn't a Mustang boat. Really.
Yeah, this was real Mustang behavior.
That was a big surprise. Second flop of the week, our producer, now again demoted to associate producer, Ethan, gave my cell phone number to the whole world for about half a day.
Nice. Good job.
Hang on.
Hey, can we turn his mic off?
The last podcast.
Here we go. Wait, okay. So, I mean, I don't really have that much of a defense other than I'm not rewatching the entire episode when we're editing it.
Isn't that what we pay you for?
Not to rewatch the entire thing, but you got to understand, when I'm editing a video, I have like the notes that I made. This is where it is.
This should
fault.
Be
I
a just, note.
I didn't make a note of your phone number.
Doug left a message for somebody with his cell phone number to call them back. Let's not
that one
broadcast
slipped through the cracks. Yeah. I don't have a defense against that, but yeah.
I only found out because somebody left me a voicemail.
Now that's funny.
That's amazing.
Ethan.
Now we should clarify. If you try to go back and it's been edited, you can't find this version anymore. So don't waste your time going back. But there was about a 12-hour period where you could get Doug's phone number if you listen to the podcast.
On that note, our prop of the week, Gentleman's Garage completely covered their Ferrari supercars, an F40, an F50, and a LaFerrari in blinky Christmas lights, which I love. I'm all into the Christmas season. I social media of people doing crazy things with Christmas lights and Christmas trees and putting them on the top of fantastic cars and drifting through the snow. But this one, they like, I mean, they had thousands and thousands of lights taped to the top of these cars, which was awesome. Although I was a little disappointed, they just kind of like drove sedately through town. So, you know, it was like kind of a cross between Tax the Rich and Alex Choi level of flamboyancy.
Oh, man, but is Tax the Rich doing anything anymore?
But with no tire smoke.
Oh, yeah.
I think they did recently. Tax the Rich put up a video recently. They're still out there.
If we had an internet out here, I would look it up, but we do not. So
yes. Anyway, so that was
I'm going to
cool.
have to check that out.
It's very cool video. Anyway, thank you for joining us tonight. It's been fun. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.